I'd like to call the meeting of the Carson City Open Space Committee to order. Today is Monday, March 16th, 2015. Pleased to have the members of the committee here with the exception of Toby Wellborn. We have a new member, Alan Welch. Alan, welcome to the committee. Alan was appointed by the Board of Supervisors here recently, and unfortunately, they also appointed me. So here I am. I guess we need a roll call just to determine our quorum.
Chairperson Scott.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Riedel.
Here.
Member Evans.
Here.
Member Fitzsimmons.
Here.
Member Inverson.
Here.
Member Welch.
Here.
Member Wellborn. The quorum's present.
One other thing I would like to ask, we have Rich Wilkinson here. Many of us know of Rich, but I don't know that you've met everybody. Rather than have Ann introduce you, Rich, why don't you just introduce yourself briefly, tell us a little bit about what they put you through to get to this position, and just let us know a little bit about what you're doing and a little bit about yourself. And it's nice to have you as part of the team.
Well, first of all, thank you. I want to thank Roger, Ann, and Scott for inviting me to this group. It's a pretty exciting venture for me. Looking in from the outside, it's kind of a model program, which I'm excited to be involved with. So thank you, guys. A little bit about me. I grew up here locally. I'm actually in Dayton. Played baseball in Carson. And I've been around this area since I was five, so I consider myself a local. Went to University of Nevada, Reno, and there I took me a long time, but I got my environmental resource science degree and worked with the Nevada Division of State Parks for, I believe, 12 years and took a little break from that. Came back, and my last 7 years has been managing the Dayton Valley Conservation District. So. Kind of short and sweet, but that's how I got here. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Rich. It's my understanding there were many, many qualified applicants and that Rich came to the top when the committee did their interviews and grilling sessions. So we're glad to have you with us, and if Ann treats you that way again, let us know. Okay, at this point, do we have any public comments? Particularly on anything that's not on the agenda. Public is somewhat limited, so we'll assume that that's not at this time. Do we have any modifications to the agenda?
No modifications, Chairman.
Okay, Chairman may be a fleeting thing with the next agenda item.
Chairman minutes.
Chairman minutes, yes. That's what I meant. Thank you, Don. We do have the minutes from our last meeting, which was our regular meeting on December 15th, 2014. Are there any comments, corrections, or changes to the minutes? Hearing none, do I have a motion?
I move to approve the minutes of Monday, December 15th, 2014.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I second the motion.
Okay, on the motion and a second to approve the minutes, is there any public comment? Okay, any committee comment? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved. The next item is the election of a chairperson and a vice chairperson. We do this on an annual basis. Are there any nominations or any recommendations for that position or those positions?
I move to nominate Bruce Scott for chairperson.
Second. Mark Fitzsimmons. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. There must be somebody else out there. Further nominations?
I move to make Howard Riedel the Vice Chairman of the Open Space Advisory Committee for 2015.
Second, Cora Fitzsimmons.
Okay, we have motions for myself as chairman and Howard as vice chairman. Are there any other nominations, comments from the floor? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Well, thank you very much. Okay, the next item is a presentation from Ducks Unlimited regarding a proposed wetland enhancement project at Old Buzzy's Ranch property, the Anderson Ranch. Are you going to introduce that, Rich, or? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to just briefly talk about the grant. Ducks Unlimited was awarded a grant from North American Wetlands Conservation Act for several projects on the Carson River watershed, I believe 9 on the Carson River. And one of those projects was planned for Buzzy Anderson's Ranch. So I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce Dan Ranlett, regional biologist with Ducks Unlimited.
Dan, welcome to Open Space. Nice to have you here.
John Ranlett.
John, excuse me. It's nice to have you here. We've heard about the project, seen bits and pieces, but we haven't heard much detail. So it's nice to have you here tonight.
Yeah, well, thank you for the invitation to be here. And just a little background on how we got here. The Great Basin is an area of continental importance to migrating waterfowl. Particularly in springtime, the region can support millions of bird use days between mid-January and mid-April or so. And Ducks Unlimited has been looking to do project work in the Lahontan Valley, Carson Valley area for the last 15 to 20 years. And one of our funding mechanisms to get out here is through the North American Wetland Conservation Act. That's a public-private partnership grant. And in order, you can put in an application request for up to $1 million. In order to be successful with that request, you need $2 million of non-federal money as match. So this landscape has always been match limited from our perspective. And we've been looking for the last 15 to 20 years again for this opportunity and just reading different things, keeping abreast what's going on out here. Came across what Juan Guzman and his program was doing in the Carson River Canyon several years ago with the purchase of the SERPA property. That was all local money, non-federal money. So it's like, there's a potential match opportunity. So I got to know Juan and played 20 questions or 40 questions and just said, here's a good opportunity. But it would not be successful to write a grant request for the Carson Valley area solely. So I had to convince Juan, trust us, if we could leverage your money, we'll include some project work up in the Carson Valley, but we have to go out to the Carson Sink, Stillwater Refuge area, Carson Lake and Pasture, where the large numbers of waterfowl, shorebirds, waterbirds are that the NACA grant folks are interested in. Nonetheless, it's like, you know, let us, you know, propose some work out there. That's where some of those 9 projects are, to which Rich referred. But then we'll also propose work on your properties. And so Juan said, yeah, let's run with it. So long and short, you know, we wrote an application several years ago, and we were successful. But as we were scoping projects and opportunities, Juan took us on a car ride once with Ann, and we went up Boldinger Canyon and looked at, you know, some of the river properties. And coming back, looked out, you know, from the east side, looked down and said, hey, Juan, what's that? What's that green patch out there? And he said, well, that's our property. And I said, oh, okay, we'll have to get back to that. And, you know, there's potential opportunities there. So, you know, we ferreted out some things and put in a part of our proposal was to do a flood irrigated pasture improvement project on, you know, the colored portion you see on the screen there. And the notion of flood irrigated pastures, those are some of the important landscapes that spring migrating waterfowl really utilize heavily during spring migration. Grazed landscapes, hayed landscapes on which several inches up to a foot of water are applied during spring migration, you know, bring a lot of seed to the surface, a lot of bugs out of the ground, and the waterfowl will do a lot of eating to regain body condition to sustain their migrations to the Prairie Pothole region or the boreal forest of Canada, Alaska. So, you know, this fit the bill of what a lot of the recent research had been for the Great Basin landscape for spring migration. So I said, well, let's, you know, what do you think, Juan? Could we, you know, you have a grazing tenant out there right now, and it looks good the way he's doing things. But, you know, let's see if we can come up with a project that works for the city in the long run, but also the current grazing tenant, because ducks and cattle go, you know, hand in hand quite well. You know, some people see some conflicts, but, you know, this one, you know, if we could improve it for spring migration, and then if there's water on the landscape during this summer and fall that support broods or support fall migrating waterfowl, all the better. But if we could improve it during for spring migration and make it work for Mickey so he doesn't feel threatened, and, you know, let's propose a project. So we went through some iterations with Juan, with Mickey, with Chris McKenzie, to, you know, Chris, you know, using him as a sounding board to make sure we weren't trying to push Mickey aside. And it's like, you know, if this doesn't work for Mickey first and foremost, let's not propose something here. So anyhow, looking at the diagram up there, we proposed three different, you know, two of the pastures. The blue pasture already exists. What we liked about that one there, there's a pond in the bottom portion that supports broods. And also, you know, when we were out there today, it had, you know, 50, 80 pintail mallard, cinnamon teal, gadwall, and then a lot of Canada goose use out there. But during the breeding season, some of those birds would take their broods there if there's water on it come summertime. So it's like, well, let's, you know, there's a good wet feature there. And then moving to the north, you have pasture that's a little bit in bad shape from, you know, waterfowl perspective, but also it's dominated by tules, which is an indication of some water management issues where it probably stays saturated too long. And so we looked at it and said, if we can propose some improvements to improve the ability to get water onto the pastures and also off the pastures quickly, it'll promote grass growth, minimize tule growth, and, you know, we might be able to do something that works for the rancher. And so you know, we proposed the concept, and it worked, you know, so far with Mickey. We've had one good discussion. We need a follow-up meeting with him to turn the concept into a permittable, constructible project. But for the features, there are – why don't you go to the next slide? Yeah, you could see some dotted lines in the middle and lower pastures. Those are where we'd be proposing to excavate some swales to improve water coming onto the site, but also leaving the site. And in between, there's a solid line where we would be, you know, almost, where we'd be proposing to construct a 2 foot high, 3 foot high berm in there, 12 foot wide across the top and 2 to 3 feet high with gradual side slopes to act as the dividing point behind which we'd be able to flood up the field to, you know, a foot to 18 inches deep for irrigation or for waterfowl habitat, whatever the purpose was. And if – can you go back one slide? If you see the blue splotches in both of those pastures, those would be wide spots along the drainage swale that would serve as when it's flooded, they'd be ponded, you know, discrete ponded areas. But then when you would pull your – open your water control structures and let the water out, then water would drain to the swale and out of the pastures. But the swales and the potholes provide dirt that is needed to construct either the new berm or to enhance existing berm. So it would be a cut and fill balance for come construction. And then we'd have probably 6 or 8 water control structures to install there just to provide good management flexibility for water delivery and water drainage. And let's see. I think that's probably the highlight right now. Why don't you go 2 slides, and we've got a, you know, what's next. So we've shot a topo survey, combined that with LIDAR that the city already had. So we've got good topographic data from which to plan. Had a meeting with Ann and with Mickey and then with Trina Johnson from NRCS several months ago to talk about concepts and learned a whole bunch of good stuff from Mickey, but you know, he's been on the land for years, so he understands really well how the water works. So need to get my engineer back for a meeting with Mickey just to ferret out some fine details so we can move forward with a plan that then we can put in for archaeology clearances, and then we'll need to get some Army Corps permits probably. And then we need likely community outreach. You know, when people see heavy equipment show up in their backyard open space, they'll probably wonder what the heck's going on. So figure we need a little bit of outreach there. But you know, once we get through that, you know, we'd be ready to put it to bid and construct it at a time that works for the city and for Mickey. So so after we meet with Mickey here, probably in early April, we'd be at a place where we could move forward, refine the concept plan, and then you know, could come back and give you a better update with things on what it's looking like. But any questions?
Thank you, John. Any questions of the committee? Yes, Margie.
I have a couple of questions on the project. I guess the first question I'm going to ask is, where do you anticipate the water coming from to do the flooding?
The way Mickey manages the water right now, when he's irrigating the Silver Saddle, it comes through down onto the ranch. So there's a lot of sub-irrigation that ends up in these pastures. And then he also has his Mexican ditch water that can go out there. So those would be the sources.
Okay, so you're using some of his water allocation to do this?
Yes.
Okay. My second question is the this may be more to Anne, but there's an existing constructed wetland that's a little bit south of all this. Is that going to be affected by the change in water?
All of these areas right now have water rights, designated water rights. Okay. And as John talked about, when we talked with Mickey and mapped the ditches, the topography, and exactly how does the water flow into this area, most of it is from Silver Saddle, which actually comes across the street in a ditch and then out to our ranch versus the mitigation wetlands, which has its own head gate at the Mexican ditch. So the sources of water come from two different directions.
Okay, so we're not going to be drying up one wetland to build others?
Well, we certainly cannot dry up the mitigation wetlands since that's a requirement.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, originally when we had looked at it too, Our initial understanding was water came from the Mexican ditch through some head gates other than to the mitigation wetlands out to the ranch. And then when I met with Mickey the one time, he said, oh, no, that's different water source. So, but that's where it's really, Mickey understands it well. My engineer needs to get in his brain to figure out how best to make it work with,
Just in a general sense, I think, John, we appreciate, the detail, and I'm pleased to see that we can hopefully be improving the ability to manage water on the ranch. If you can go to one of those pictures, Anne, that shows the overall ranch, I don't know if people realize, but basically the ranch kind of drains to the middle. It's a little different than what you might think, and the area where those ponds are is pretty much the low spot. And so managing the water and what you're proposing to do, I think, can allow better management, improvement of the property from a ranching perspective, as well as enhancing the waterfowl perspective, which I think is, as long as we're working very carefully with Mickey, who sometimes doesn't speak up loudly, we don't want, we have an obligation to him. At the same time, he's not in a position to put in major improvements. So I see lots of room here for win-win.
Yeah, and he's working with NRCS on to the portions to the east through some EQIP programs,
right.
It looks like. So trying to marry up the two sources of funding to make it a more functional water delivery system for him.
That would be real helpful.
And then in the long run, too, after Mickey decides he's going to retire from cattle, then the city has a more workable, new infrastructure and easier time of managing things.
No, that's great. What are the obligations that we would take on with this project?
So with the North American Wetland Conservation Act, they want to see their the improvements for which they pay maintained for 25 years. But as a working landscape, in the short term, that seems just keep the cattigi out there. In the long run, maintain the infrastructure and see that it's flood irrigated in the springtime just so you can have some benefits to migrating waterfowl.
Any other questions from the committee? Yes, Howard.
John, what's your timeline for this? I know at times getting a permit from the Corps can be cumbersome.
It was really good last year until the omnibus or the continuing resolution went in and took out an exemption that we could have been exempt from Army Corps permit requirements here. But so we're back to a nationwide permit application request and several different tacks to do that. But so after we get the concept solidified with Mickey, then it would be pretty much concurrently cultural resource clearance and then outreach to the Army Corps and then public outreach. And so would like to be in a position to go to construction this fall with it after, irrigation season is done. But, that have to see, assuming that timing works for Mickey. And then if not, the funding is good for 2 years, so if we can't build it in 2015, we do it at 2016 at a good time for the partners.
I have a couple questions. All right, in regards to our taking over and maintaining it, should Mickey ever quit running cattle there, there's no guarantee that we're going to have the water rights. So where are we going to get the water from to continue to flood?
That was one thing, too, where we looked at. So if it's not, if it's dry in the summer and the fall, but wanting it to function somewhat from natural precipitation and assuming years to come, we'll see wetter winters and springtime, just having natural precip put enough water out there to have some ponded waters, a little bit of sheet flooding in the pastures would be totally acceptable.
Okay. And the second question, the new fencing, the purpose of that is to keep the cattle out of the ponds?
Actually, we only propose fencing on the lower pasture to to separate. So the cows are in the ponds only when we need them in there for vegetation management. And if that turns out to be a critical watering spot for the cows, then we'd look at, some little alleyway in there, fence a pathway in, put some rock down, filter fabric, whatever, just so the cows could water and not muck up the water too badly.
Okay. And it's just going to be standard barbed wire fencing?
Yeah. Right now that's the concept.
Yes, Ann.
I'd like to add to the answer to Donna regarding the water rights. When the Carson City purchased both these properties, both the Open Space Advisory Committee and the Board of Supervisors stated that we need to find a way to keep these fields green. So if it's a matter of acquiring water rights, which John and I entered into that discussion today, or if it's looking at Brunswick Reservoir, or other non-potable sources in Carson City, we need to look at that. The other thing, which is in the draft management plan for these areas, if we can't keep it all irrigated, we need to look at that now while there's water and start working on some restoration projects before it becomes a weed patch.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that we haven't lost sight of the need to acquire more water, and that's something that we're working on in more of a general sense, but definitely trying to make sure that the water doesn't disappear from that area. Right now, the water rights on that ranch are basically, we have the right to use them by virtue of being the landowner and the fact that they have not been moved. The city does own water rights on Silver Saddle, but not on Buzzy's Ranch. Any other comments or questions from the committee? Okay, any public comment? Thank you, John. Don't go away. There may be some more comments here, but any public comment?
Mr. Chairman, where's the on-off here?
It's on.
It's on. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm Doug Martin. I'm the chairman of the Carson City Wildlife Advisory Board. And I also have a couple other hats. One of them, I am on the board of directors for Stillwater Farms Canvasback Gun Club. We own the largest wetland in the state of Nevada, and we also are a cattle operation in Stillwater Farms. Also, I am an owner of a retriever. So between all three of those hats, I have a lot of interest in A, wise water use, B, wetland enhancement, and C, waterfowl. From a waterfowl perspective, we have asked the city and this this board to consider allowing alternative uses on this property when appropriate with the landowner, either through him or his attorney, which would include such events as perhaps Sierra Nevada Retriever Club holding operations in, especially in the blue area that you see here. From a water perspective, and from a wetland perspective, and from a grazing perspective, and if you wouldn't mind backing up your pictures to the cover picture you had. When you look at this particular picture, I have been a part owner of, again, the largest wetland in the state of Nevada, and it's operated as a cattle ranch and as a waterfowl habitat area. When you look at this particular picture, while the tules are quite inviting and they're quite green, it's an indicator that you are not using water wisely from a waterfowl perspective, and you can do a lot with this. They do take up a lot of water, and as you said, Bruce, this indicates that it's the lowland and it's staying flooded quite a bit. But with some cut and fill, we're finding on our property that shallow water management is A, good with cattle, and B, is good with wildlife. We have seen an influx since we started shallow water management of a particular ground cover called Swamp Timothy. And Swamp Timothy is loved by cattle, and it's loved by waterfowl. And I do know that we use less water now because we have lasered, we have done cut and fill, and now we can put a lot less water and grow a lot more waterfowl habitat. And in fact, the projects we received include EQIP projects and wetland enhancement projects from NRCS. So A, I'm familiar with those processes. I'm really supportive of anything that you're doing in this particular area. I'm a 47-year resident of Carson City. I'm involved and active. I'm also the now past district manager of the Nevada Tahoe Conservation District, and I'm the newly appointed Carson City representative to that board. So with all those hats, I don't know if you can see where I'm going, but I support this, and if there's anything that the Carson City Wildlife Advisory Board can do to help with these processes or I can do personally, please let me. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Can staff make a point then to keep Doug in the loop and coordinate so he can take advantage of his expertise and experience?
Yes, now, we can certainly do that.
Thank you. It's my understanding, Doug, that one of the things you guys do is you train Canadian geese to migrate. We'd like to enhance that program, if you would.
No, sorry. But you know, one of the things that it's John, right? One of the things that John said is absolutely gospel here as far as waterfowl, especially the dabblers that he mentioned. The time that we're using and that they use our water is spring and fall. And anybody who's been out to Greenhead last week, you'll see thousands of snow geese and tens of thousands of ducks. But they're only there until the water dries up. And in fact, they're breeding. They're heading toward their breeding grounds. So I'm sorry, Bruce, I cannot ask the geese to move. But what you're doing here is great, and I'm very happy to help out.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your comments, and we'll look forward to your input to the project. Okay. Are there any other public comments? Any other questions or comments from the committee? Okay, this is not an action item. Is that correct, Ann? Just a presentation and discussion?
Correct. Presentation and discussion only.
All right. With that last request for public comment, we will then go to our next item, which is item C, presentation and discussion only regarding a research project by students in the Wilderness Ethics class at Sierra Nevada College on the Carson River Canyon open space. Ann.
Thank you. Last December, for the second year in the row, Mark Kimbrough worked with Rosie Hackett, one of the teachers up at Sierra Nevada College, to engage the students in projects down in Carson City. And also last year, Donna Inverson was able to join. And with us in the audience is Mark Kimbrough, and then we also have a video of their presentation. The video, I will warn, might be difficult to see, but more important is listening to the students and what they have to say as well. But I'll turn it over to Mark, see if he has any other introduction comments before we begin the video.
Thank you, Ann. Mark.
Thanks, Ann. Hi. I'm Mark Kimbrough, for the record. Volunteer for this project. So there's no confusion. Sometimes I wear the different hats sometimes, too. A couple years ago, I was working on a trail plan in Incline Village that became my nemesis. But I got to know a community college class there for wilderness ethics. Let me excuse myself. I'm at the end of a cold, hanging in there, see if I keep my voice tonight here. So hopefully it's not spreading the germs, just kicking the end of the deal out here. So I got to work with her class, and she was looking for opportunities to take her students out and give them a real opportunity to look at some place in recreation that they would be able to look at and come up with problem solving and discuss. And I'm going to put it right to the basics here. And actually, Margie came last year, too, to one of the classes. I come in and talk to them, and it's all about the balance that you guys are going to start working on a lot, which you just talked about. This is a resource, public use and resource, the balance. And that's kind of what the class comes to, and that's and I love working with that next generation because they're the ones that are going to come up and help us out as we grow into these open space areas and do these things and help us as the political part of this to get it all done. So they break it into sessions, and it's a short-term class, and it is college students, so they procrastinate till the end to get the projects done. But they come, I bring them down, I take them to the spots, and Juan was heavily involved last year. This year he wasn't because he had left by the time they came down. So we tour all these different areas. We went to the waterfall, we went to Ambrose, we went to Silver Saddle, and we went to the V&T, we went to different places, and then all I do is tell them that this type of user group is here, and there's this type of resource, and what do you think their needs might be, and they need to go on the internet, do some search, call me, I send them maps, and they talk about whether they might do interpretive programs or if there's resource programs needed, and it's a really short recreation class that you would take in college, but the Bridge Reader's Digest version of this process. So this year, I brought them down this year, and there were five sessions, I think, five groups, and Donna came to the final. They like to do the report out, and next year, actually, we're hoping maybe we can come to open space with them because they're really interesting from that perspective, and it's really nice to see that student perspective, and I don't feed them too much. I try to just tell them how recreation works with people with my 40-plus years in the industry. So it's their ideas and their perspective, and some of it you guys have done, some of it's part of the plan already, but I don't interject any of that in there. They come up with their own. So this presentation was given, and I kind of just smiled and enjoyed this one tremendously because it's exactly where this group's moving here, dealing with situations in the Carson River Canyon that have been there for 100 years, and how do we change that? We, meaning open space, and how do we move this area into, after open space bought it, into what maybe it should properly be, how it should properly be managed, and some of the steps it might take to do that. And these kids did a pretty good job. So I'm not going to say a lot about it, so I hope the quality's there. I asked them to film it, and they brought some kid in there with some camera, and he put it on his hip, and it was shooting from his hip. So that I think it's pretty dark, but you can hear him, and you can see their slides. But it's their discussions that I think you might find interesting, is how I'll put that. And then I'd like to come up at the end and discuss because we had some questions afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Well, so I'm Corey. This is Jason. Chuck over there. Our piece of land was the Carson OHV area and the open space, considered open space by the city. So we actually got a chance to go check out this place for the weekend. It's a beautiful area. It's got the Carson River running right through it. There's OHV trails going back about 4 miles until the road ends, basically hits river and dead ends, and you can't go past that, at least on anything besides foot. But these are some of the pictures that we got out there. In the Silver Saddle Ranch, it's a pretty lush riparian zone. I didn't quite expect it. I don't know if you guys did. But it was pretty surprising how beautiful it was. So this is us. We kind of went out there with the mind frame of how anyone else in Carson uses the area, so that it actually involved a little bit of rule breaking, but it was all for getting the best perspective on this piece of land. So this was our little campsite back there.
It's pretty relevant the whole time. You're actually deep in the canyons. There's gunshots echoing through the canyon all day into the late evening. So we decided we were going to head down there, like I said, not really mainly to like break rules, but we wanted to see what kind of presence was out in the environment, prohibiting these sorts of things from happening. So we were out there, we were shooting, there was no presence of any kind of law enforcement, federal agencies, BLM, anything of that sort. And there is like less than 2 miles away from this exact spot. There is a fully functional gun range that is completely free of charge for anybody to go to. So the need for firearms and shooting out in this area is completely non-existent. No need for shooting out here, especially with the main road running right across, right where most of the campsites have been built from squatters and whatnot.
You guys probably don't remember where we stopped at. There's a bridge. I forget the name of the bridge.
Deer Run
Road. There's that little sign we looked at. That's really the only thing there is out there telling you what you can and can't do. So it'd be very easy for somebody to be ignorant and go back there and just do whatever they want.
And just to speak to that a little bit, the river corridor is owned by the city of Carson. The river itself is owned by the state, the water, and everything below the water line. And then the land...
saying
too, with just the members of Carson using the area. One thing that when we stayed there overnight, we actually didn't feel safe down there. One of the main things why we did was because we brought guns. But if this is an open space for all of Carson to use, for people like us to not feel safe, that's one thing. But that means families aren't going to use it. It just deters people from coming in there when they see all of the shells and people squatting there. So if there was a closure of OHV and foot traffic only, we could totally see the area as a community park almost, where people can go back in there, have picnics, there's benches, things like that, with a restored ecosystem.
These are just a couple examples of some groups that could have possible partnerships with the open space area out there. As far as some grants, there are city and government grants available to the open space areas. You also have private groups, the OHV license program, the RTP grant, which I think were all very good avenues and ways to get funding to do some kind of management in this area.
There's some more pieces in there missing. They talked about the lack of wildlife, and that they drove down towards the river, and there's nothing to stop them, so they started driving the river, and they stopped. They thought, well, this isn't right. So that night while they were sleeping, somebody drove their Jeep through their camp down the river, right down the river. So they saw everything you're not supposed to see and broke every rule you're not supposed to break while they were down there. But I thought it was just fun to bring to this group, just to give you a perspective of a piece of property that now Open Space in Rogers Pork Shop is responsible for. And now they actually they have a person that knows river systems and conservation and those for restoration. But I thought it was just interesting because we're moving towards that with this group. And maybe next year they can come and look at different areas again and come and talk to you about those things. And you might challenge them with some of the things you might think that what you'd like to have them answer for you. So that's all that was. Just that was kind of cool and funny, actually, that they're down there partying, drinking, and shooting, and driving around, and it surrounded. They even had a picture of a guy that was down there illegally camped that they were a little nervous about. They took a picture of him down there, too. So about half of that flick disappeared, I think. And unless Donna has anything to say, I'm done. It was just.
Thank you, Mark. Any questions or anything?
The only thing I want to say is if these were young men, they went down there with their OHVs, their guns, and beer. You can't really see from what one picture, but they've all got their guns together with a can of beer in the middle. So, and one of the things that didn't show up on here, that they talked to people who were down there using it, and they were asking the people, what do you see as problems here? And primarily their response was that the problem was the dumping. And they asked these people, well, what about the destruction to the land that the OHVs are doing? And the overall attitude was, that's not a problem. But their recommendation as shooters and OHV users was to close that area to OHVs and to shooting. So.
Any other comments from the committee? Any public comments? Interesting observations, Mark. And, you know, probably they have camped in there more recently than any of us. So it may be an interesting commentary on things we need to be aware of and elements in terms of public education. I know just as an aside, on Sunday, I think last week, maybe it was Saturday, I was driving south across the Deer Run Road Bridge, the high bridge off Highway 50, and there was a Jeep stuck under the sign that says no access right there, literally within 10 feet of the edge of Deer Run Road because there's a lot of soft dirt there, and he was actually stuck there as I drove by. So education remains a challenge, I think, and something that we're really going to have to work on. And some of the comments and some of the questions here in the video brought that out. One of the things I heard that caught my attention was the possibility of grant funding from the OHV licensing fees, and I do think that's something we probably should consider. Maybe from an educational standpoint, maybe from other perspectives, but there are some funds I think, becoming available with that OHV license fee that we might think about in terms of our programs.
Hey Bruce, can I make a point there?
Sure.
The OHV licensing group doesn't have a lot of money, but RTP is begging. I work with Great Basin Institute, too, and I've done some OHV projects with them. And Jenny Scanlon's out begging for people to do OHV projects. The OHV people do not have their act together about getting stuff done, and that's not bad about them. So it takes other groups sometimes to take the lead to do some of the stuff, and it's not against OHVs, and I'm going to talk about this later, actually, when we talk about the RMP over here. But there's thousands and thousands of dollars available for OHV projects, and that could mean that they're still allowed, but there's certain areas that might be restricted in signage and education, all the things that come with it.
Great. Thank you, Mark. And that's something, Ann, that we probably should maybe become a little bit more aware of if we can, or see if we have some programs that might fit. We'll be talking about other grant programs later on on our agenda, but this one sounds interesting. And I really hope we can start with some education, because I see a real value in helping, trying to get folks who I think are probably generally well-meaning a better feel for the bigger picture as we try to find a balance with our open space and our uses.
Chairman?
Yes, Donna.
In regards to that, Mark and Juan and I also were invited, and we went to Carson Valley High School to talk to three classes there, two outdoor classes and an environmental class. And one of the things that I threw out to the kids was a couple of potential projects that could either be done as senior projects or class projects. And the environmental teacher, what is her name, Mark?
John Valley, who's actually here at the Wildlife. No,
the environmental teacher, the gal.
Oh, the girl, Julie Coop.
No, it wasn't Julie Coop.
The teacher was a guy. The other gal was a teacher from another class, I think, was brought in.
Yeah, I know that, but she spoke to me afterwards and said that she thought that one of my suggestions her class was going to do is a class project, and that's to develop a little information fact sheet that could be at Trailheads about the importance of protecting the watershed and how maintaining trails and not going off trails and things like that to protect them is a benefit. So her class may be putting that project together.
Thank you, Donna. Any other comments from the committee? Okay, moving ahead. Item D, discussion and possible action to support the efforts of the Eagle Valley Trails Committee. Is that you, Ann?
Yes, again, I will introduce this item. So the item in front of you is an introduction on the Eagle Valley Trails Committee. This committee is just an informal group of citizens in the community who decided to come together to talk trails. And one of those first issues were to identify the trails, identify through mapping, inventorying, and such. And so we do have a couple people in that group. Donna is also part of that group. Toby has really done a lot of the mapping that the group is using on those projects, and Jeff Potter is here as well. And so far, this group, they've been kind of working with various members, and either Jeff or Mark can go into more of those details, but where they are now in this process is coming to each of the agencies with what they have to date to in a sense, kind of get buy-in, but also are they moving in the direction that each of us, the Forest Service, the BLM, Carson City, State Lands, all the agencies. And so at this point, Mark, Jeff, I don't know who wants to talk about the project. Jeff Potter.
Hi, Jeff. Come on up.
For the record, my name is Jeff Potter. I sit on the board of Muscle Powered, and I'm also a member of the Eagle Valley Trail Committee. By the way, Mr. Chair, thank you, and members of the committee, and welcome, Alan. Good to see you. I thought I'd talk a little bit the history about this. I've been gone for a month, and Mark will hopefully come in and fill in about the progress that we've had with the Forest Service and the BLM. And just to let you know how this came about is, you know, we have a lot of wonderful trails in Carson City. Unfortunately, there's only a couple of them that are actually system trails. Now, Ashtick Kings is a system trail. I believe, the main north loop on Prison Hill, and then there's a base loop on Prison Hill that's a system trail. But as far as I know, aware everything else is non-system, which, you know, social trails at Centennial Park, Ash Canyon area, Sea Hill. And so we thought, getting together, that, you know, we need to bring these trails into the system. And this was one way to do it, is to approach other organizations that would be interested in this, you know, the Tahoe Mountain Milers, Friends of Silver Saddle Ranch, and then also bringing the motorized user groups into this, because, you know, we're not about denying access or anything like that. So, you know, we've been in discussions with the Pine Mountain Trails Association. Since, as you can see, our group's made up of hikers, bikers, equestrians, and some motorized users. Our primary objectives for this is to respect private property rights. A lot of the trails that we have, social trails coming around, are going through private property, and, you know, we need to address that issue. We'll do an inventory review and evaluate the non-motorized trails in the study area, which is Eagle Valley from the TRT to the Pine Nuts off of Deer Run Road, and, you know, from McClellan Peak over to the border with Douglas County to the south. We'll advocate for the adoption and creation of a network of sustainable trails. And that's what generated this also, is although these are some great trails that we get to use, luckily, but a lot of them, you know, weren't built properly. And so that's part of the evaluation process, is getting out there, getting in the field, and see what will work and what won't. And then we present that to the agencies, and with input from them and hopefully their support, we can work on a plan that will make those sustainable. We'll also work with the agency to support the maintenance of those trails, which that's where Muscle Power's role is, since we already have agreement with the city to maintain the trails, this will just be some more stuff added to our plate. And we also would like to collaborate with the motorized recreation community to support their efforts, and identified during the consensus of the approved planning process. And also, it will improve the quality of life and enhance tourism in the community. And, you know, that's basically what we want to do. Hopefully, Mark will come in and correct everything I just messed up. But, you know, really, that's it. We want sustainable trails for the community. And, you know, we really couldn't do this. Mark's really helped us out in getting us off the ground and headed in the right direction. And we really couldn't be here without Toby. He's done a fantastic job with mapping of these and actually cataloging the trails, which that's where the Tahoe Mountain Milers came in. They had mostly every single track in the area, they have GPS. So they gave us that information. Toby worked with that, and now and I don't have that information in front of me, I'm sorry, but we've got how many miles of single track, double track, we've got slope analysis, and it's really cool, the stuff that Toby's doing with this.
Well, great. Jeff, thank you.
Sure.
And we know you come by this honestly in terms of trail building, so we appreciate all you do. Did anybody have any questions of Jeff before? Did you have something to add? Okay, any questions of Jeff before we let him sit down? Okay, I think we've got a couple other things on the agenda that would be interesting from a trails perspective as well. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Mr. Kimbrough.
No, this is a really great volunteer project, and this is kind of what I did up in Incline. There was a trail group of people. It's not connected to, not a nonprofit. It's a committee that was formed, that it's a community group asking for these reviews. We've met with the Carson Ranger District. We've met with BLM. We met with Open Space. And our next target is State Lands, where we hope that'll go well for us, because there's a bunch of trails that they don't really want us to talk about. But all we have done is an inventory. And we haven't put desire lines on there. There's a few desire lines, which means places people would like to see trails, because we want to take this after the agencies have said, which they have, every one of them been highly supportive, that once we get feedback from the public and discussion, then we can come and say these what might be the areas that might be preferred, and then set priorities. And there's a whole process here that's going to saved this city and this community several thousands of dollars by volunteers. And then the agencies will have to work towards EAs and all those other things. We understand that. But this group, we hope. When this was started, Juan helped this group, and Roger was a part of that decision. I helped them a little bit as staff, but primarily I help them as a volunteer. So there's that fine point there, which helps them move this along, and I help do all the copying and the paperwork, and which every volunteer group kind of needs that person to keep the ball rolling a little bit. So, but we met last week about having open space, kind of so we can say open space supports this. So you'll see this as an action item tonight. And there's a timeline that's going on here. We have all these meetings, and we're trying to get done by this summer. We're going to have two public meetings, and that open space would help us by getting us a room set up and stuff. And it would be a formal type of public meeting where people can come in. They'll write comments. They'll put desire lines. We'll have them actually do some studies about where they go, what trails are favorite, and get a lot of feedback from the user groups. And we haven't finalized all that yet, but nobody has to own that. And it's kind of what's called a pre-scoping meeting for federal government. When you do anything on federal land, you got to do a EA, and you got to do scoping meetings. So this is like a pre-scoping, which really helps the agencies because they'll get a ton of public input before they initiate any planning that sometimes will weed out any concerns that might hit us. The one that hit me in Incline was access up in the billionaires' properties there, the millionaires up at the top. We have access points which can be political. So there's some things that can come out that this might help shelter that a little bit, because this is just an inventory. It's not any more than that, saying here's what exists. So a lot of work's been done so far, and we have some collateral to hand to everybody. And then there's a timeline, if anybody's interested, by this summer we were hoping to have two public works meetings with the agencies invited. They'd be there to talk to the public about that. Yeah, you can say what you want, but we still need to do EAs and things like that. You can't just. And then the private property issues, we will send a letter to those owners asking permission to place the line on their property. If we get a negative response, there won't be a line on their property. So there'll just be gaps showing that there's no trail there, because we don't want to end up in that situation. Douglas County had a total blow up on the Carson River about putting desire lines down the river. And the private property owners come in and said, just blasted them. Actually, that person lost his job over that. So a lot of this is volunteers, so we won't lose our job, but we might bring some flack we don't want for trails in this community. And the OHV, we've invited them to participate because we want to support them and what they want. And we're putting two tracks in that because there's certain roads that mountain bikes and hikers use that OHVs use too. So we want to keep them in the system and show them we're not going to try to close anything, and to support them in whatever OHV want to do too. So that's as much as I guess information you need. I have a timeline if you want it, and then I was hoping that action could be taken to support this endeavor from a lot of hardworking folks, actually.
Thank you, Mark. Any questions from the committee? Any public comments? Okay, this is agendized as an action item requesting support of the efforts of the Eagle Valley Trails Committee. Yes, Donna.
I think probably I need to recuse myself from voting, but I do have one statement to make, and it kind of came up. Right now we're just in this planning, you know, this inventory phase, but I think our ultimate goal is that we will be able to present to Carson City, Eagle Valley, a system of trails that are all connected, that are mapped, that we can advertise to, you know, tourists and things like that. So.
Okay. You're going to recuse yourself then from voting? Okay. Any other public comment? Do we have a motion? Margie.
I move to support the efforts of the Eagle Valley Trails Committee, and I additionally move that we give them our great thanks for all the work they're doing.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Laura Fitzsimmons, I wholeheartedly second that motion.
Okay. Any public comment on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
Donna's abstaining. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Yeah, the ability to circumnavigate Eagle Valley, I think, is a great goal, and we've got a lot of pieces out there already in place. Okay, our next item is item E for discussion and possible action to recommend to the Board of Supervisors the transmittal of a letter to the Bureau of Land Management providing comments on the Carson City District Draft Resource Management Plan and Environmental Impact Statement. Ann, are you going to start this one?
I will start this one. I will attempt to start this one. BLM came to the Open Space Advisory Committee last December with a brief presentation, really, I think, covering 4 to 6 subjects. But in my presentation, I will identify all of the subjects that they covered and then highlight some of those that we tried to highlight in our comments as it relates to the city or maybe even this committee specific. Also, as we formulated our comments were based on our comments submitted back in December 2012 when BLM was going through their scoping period. We identified several subjects, several items of concern. So I referenced that letter, looked at what they did in their most current document, and tried to see, well, did they relate to what our suggestions were? In most instances, they were. Sometimes they weren't, and so those are highlighted for you this evening. In your packet, it might be a little confusing the way it's organized. The item says recommend the transmittal of a letter. When this item is finalized, it will have a cover letter similar to the one that is addressed in December 2012. And then the first attachment here is, if you will, like attachment to the letter. So these are our comments. So that's the first attachment in here. It has the page numbers on the bottom, pages 1 through 6. The next item that follows, some of the committee members, Donna, I think, had the first comments here, Cultural Resources, Howard, and Toby. I very much appreciate, and Margie also looked at ACEC's areas of critical environmental concern, but had no specific comments in that chapter. But I included their full comments here because it went into a little bit more detail that it is more than what our letter at this point states. But if there are changes and suggestions, please feel free to let me know. And so with that said, I'll walk you through the process, some of the things that we highlighted here. So the BLM Resource Management Plan, when it comes to the topic categories, they have 4 different subjects. So the first subject is resources. The next one is resource uses. So I'll walk you through those. And then the topics that are highlighted in yellow are the topics that this specific letter addresses. And if our letter didn't address it, for the most part, it's because I thought Carson City could agree with their alternative C, which is the agency preferred alternative. And that's the first introduction to our attachment there. So with that, but also, if it's not highlighted here, maybe I didn't review it. It is a 2,000-page document. We do have members in the audience, so we're still open for comments. But I'll walk you through what we were able to cover up to this point. So under resources, air and climate, we did not review. Soils and water resources, a comment that's included in your attachment 1. Soils and water resources, this is where they cover the floodplain and category, and they talk about erosive soils. So our comment here particularly relates to Sierra Vista Lane and the drainages, the channels in there, that the vegetation and the soil is eroding, with the suggestion that OHVs need to be managed in that area, particularly as it relates to erosion and flooding, as we saw about 6 months ago when we had a rain event in that area, then leading down to the Carson River. And our resource management plan identifies the Carson River as a priority watershed. So that is why that's in a bracket, because they refer to that as a priority watershed. Second, in vegetation, they had a couple categories under vegetation. So we did include just a reiteration that in our initial letter talked about the importance of managing pinyon and juniper forest. Immediately right at our interface, we haven't had a concern, but if you look back into the pinets, those forests are getting dense. And further back east along the property line to Lyon County is some of the priority habitats for sage grouse, right at the border and then on into Lyon County and Douglas County. One of the items that staff disagrees with BLM, and so we would like your concurrence on this, relates to invasive non-native species and weeds. BLM, and they have their summary table. Colleen had talked about their summary table. Alternative A is the no action alternative. Status quo, nothing changes. Alternative B is the industry, commercial development build intensive. Alternative C is wildlife habitat, kind of that preservation conservation approach. Alternative D is the urban interface, and alternative C is the agency preferred. And so when they talked about noxious weeds, they had under each of those categories in the conservation column, their focus area for weeds were the habitat areas. And alternative D, the urban interface, their focus was the interface. Alternative, they didn't identify a focus. And so our letter specifically emphasizes 4 points, and I think I would like to emphasize this with BLM. One is the use of chemicals. Over the last 9 years that I have worked for Carson City, I think BLM has used chemicals in Carson City once, maybe twice. Maybe Margie says twice. So that actually has been a challenge with BLM. We have been treated, just not by BLM. When Margie and the subconservancy had money from the ARA funding a few years ago, some of that money was used to treat some of those areas, particularly on the lands coming to Carson City, because I did not want those weeds to get out of control. So that has been one of our challenges with the BLM. The other items I would like the committee to recommend is the focus on urban and the interface in urban areas, with the point that this is where the people are, and if we can control the weeds at those interface areas, we're reducing the spread up into the backcountry and into the habitat areas. I'm not saying they're not important, but if we can reduce the seed source, less will go into the backcountry. So that's a second point of weeds. Also, areas adjacent to non-federal lands. So if we're treating weeds, we don't want a property boundary next to BLM that's not being treated. This has been a significant point in Douglas County where Medusa head is on one side of the fence and the other. And so if BLM is not controlling their weeds, but Douglas County is, are we really making any difference in eradication? The other area of concern or recommendation to BLM is to control their small infestations. While they're small, it will cost less, and they could possibly be successful with eradication. So those are recommended changes to their agency alternative. We did not have any comments on fish and wildlife. The special status species, we did just simply make a comment in here for the greater sage grouse, the bi-state population. The BLM and the Forest Service is in a final EIS right now for the sage grouse. The habitat does include areas in Carson City. The Carson River is the western boundary. With that said, the high priority habitats are Douglas County, Lyon, and further south. So we don't have high priority habitats, and that's where everyone is spending their efforts right now. However, we have agricultural lands and we have the Carson River, and those potentially could be habitat areas. The agricultural lands provide insects, which is a food source for the sage grouse and with the river. And actually talking with McAnderson, historically we had sage grouse here.
But when the sheep stopped traveling up on into the Pinon Hills and stopped burning, which they did for the sheep, to encourage grass and forbs, that is also the forage for the sage grouse. So you stop burning, and then you have less grasses. Also with the urban development in that area. Bruce's house. No sage grouse. We also made comments on wild horse and burro. The comment in here basically remains consistent with the BLM management and remains consistent on what we identified in our Carson River management plan as well, that the BLM has jurisdiction. We support their efforts. Our management plan says we don't manage horses. It is their jurisdiction, but if the wild horses come onto our property, cause resource damage, cause public safety concerns, that we will call BLM. So it's just kind of reiterating that point. The next category is wildland fire ecology and management. I did review that section. I will pull that section out of the document and ask our fire department to review that, but that is a section that I felt that we could agree with the agency preferred alternative. Cultural resources we identified in here because we did initially, and also to reiterate with BLM that we have a programmatic agreement, also to reiterate to the public. This document does identify Prison Hill, Silver Saddle Ranch, and Ambrose as being transferred to Carson City, so that is important to know. But this is to reiterate with BLM and the public that when those lands transfer, we do have responsibility to manage those cultural resources. We made Donna did make a comment under the paleontological resources. I'm not going to say that five times. But I felt, and Donna, feel free to comment if you think I'm wrong, but I didn't include her comments because I thought we could agree with the agency alternative. Visual resources, we did make a comment there. And this committee, we're concerned about our scenic viewshed. So we did provide comments there. We did not provide comments on lands with wilderness characteristics and cave resources. The next broad category is resource uses. We did not make comments on the forestry and woodland products or livestock grazing. Livestock grazing, I would like to go back and review that chapter, though. It has come to my attention that BLM is proposing to reduce the number of livestock on the interface, which now Carson City, as we know, we've brought livestock back in on the west side of town. So I have not reviewed that section. I don't know what the impacts are, but I might bring that back to the committee. Geology and minerals. In your notes, it's just a reminder to BLM that when we passed the Omnibus Public Land Management Act, that we asked, and it was approved, the withdrawal of mining uses within the urban interface. Recreation and visitor services, we made comments on that. This is the extensive recreation management areas. Toby reviewed this section, and particularly what this relates to and perhaps what our concern is, in the Virginia Range, so over by Centennial Park, they only had one road in that area identified for motor vehicle use, which is not consistent with our Unified Pathways Master Plan. We actually identify more roads in that area. So we can provide a copy of that map to BLM. The Comprehensive Travel and Transportation Management. This is the subchapter. When Colleen Severs was here, she talked about areas are either open, closed, or limited. So in Carson City, in our jurisdiction, the motor vehicle roads currently are all identified as limited. So motor vehicle recreation can travel on existing roads until the next step of BLM of a travel and transportation plan. And then so Toby had some comments here. Well, how will the public know? And I don't know those answers. I included those in this letter to BLM. The next subcategory is lands and realty. This is the subcategory to identify the lands of disposal. The resource management plan verbally acknowledged 200 acres to be transferred to Carson City. I know of 80 of those acres. There's 40 acres on the west side of Prison Hill at the Koontz Water Tank, which BLM had reserved when we went through the lands bill process for the hotshot facility. But that is now located in Douglas County. So I think because we will be managing that area, we would like to go ahead and gain ownership. And then there's 40 acres, approximately 40 acres, on the east side of Silver Saddle Ranch. Again, there was an error in the mapping. At this time, I don't know where the other 120 are. I have a voice message with Colleen Sievers. But those are the only areas that I know of that Carson City would like to acquire. Again, I can report back to the committee. Another category is renewable energy. And Howard helped to review that section, and he had a couple of questions here on the map. And they talked about solar development and wind development, exclusion and avoidance areas. And so some of the questions, exactly what do these maps mean? And I couldn't answer those questions for Howard, so I will bring those to BLM as well. Some of the other categories that BLM covered in their plan, but we did not in our comments, are special designations, so the ACECs, which Margie reviewed, and she commented that we didn't have anything in Carson City to be concerned about. Backcountry byways, national trails, wild and scenic rivers, and just for your information, they are looking at the East Fork of the Carson River as a wild and scenic river. And wilderness study areas, and the fourth is the social and economic features, and these are the last categories. And so at this time, those are our comments on the plan. Are there any questions?
Okay, any questions for Ann?
Or Rich?
Yeah. Rich is, go ahead, Donna.
Just under page one, vegetation, the bullet point, the second sentence is a little confusing. I know what you're trying to say, but it's kind of hard to get there. Just.
Are you talking the paragraph underneath the italics? Forest and woodlands?
Yeah, the second sentence in that bullet point. In forest and woodlands, this includes removal, the creation of diverse stand ages, extraction for personal use, using the full site. And I know you're talking about pinyon pines, but it's not clear.
Okay, I can certainly add that.
It would seem to me as kind of a general statement that we have, I think the comment period ends April 26th or something, 23rd?
Correct. The comment period has been extended to the end of April.
You know, my thought is there's a lot of good information in our staff summary, but it probably needs to be augmented potentially with a little bit more research, as you've discussed, Dan, and maybe pulled together in a little bit more concise manner, so that I think a lot of these comments are really good, and I hate to see them get lost. And I think a good, if I understand it, our recommendations as this committee would be built around primarily what we've talked about tonight, but that'll go forward officially as comments from the Board of Supervisors. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so we need to get our comments consolidated and put together ahead of time, so we can't wait till our next meeting, I guess is what I'm saying, because it won't have time to get to the board. So tonight's discussion, and I think potential action, is really to give the staff direction on finalizing the comments so that we can get that to the board in time for them to review and have a hearing on it, and hopefully move it forward as comments to the BLM. With that, is there any public comment? Mr. Kimbrough.
Yeah, I thought I'd test my voice out completely tonight. Mark Kimbrough again for the record. Actually, this is absolutely insane trying to review this document. It's huge. And their system of putting things together and how you have to go search and word search from each chapter and page and stuff is insane. So I'm going to make some comments that I think are important. And the only thing I looked at, being from the recreational side of life, is Carson City's relationship with BLM on that border. And I made some comments on the recreational visitor service side, and a couple of those in there. And I just for clarification, I think it's alternative E that is the preferred choice. I kept saying EC or something, but it's E. Yeah, you were saying C, and I think it's E. Okay, good. I just wanted to, yeah, that's not to pick on you. So what happened is they are doing a better job of managing, but they have so much turf, they made these IRMAs, extensive recreation management areas. So all we're concerned about from open space for the boundaries here is the Pine Nut IRMA. And they divided that into three resource management zones, RMZs, which is good. I've actually worked on the Black Rock, so they designate different characteristics for each. So the Pine Nut Crest is the back one. Then there's the rural, then there's the frontal. They put a frontal zone over in Douglas County out of Johnson Lane, but they didn't put one over here on Carson City side. So what they did is they restricted some of the things I'd like to see happen on the BLM interface with Carson City, which I'll explain here in a few seconds, by that not designating that. And my primary concern, if anything else doesn't get said in this thing, is the absolute destruction of the habitat in the river watershed as our boundaries with BLM for the, in the soil status, that liquefaction that we talk about in the floods, and I see it all the time out there. And that is my primary concern. And that, to solve that, when I was on crack, See what happens? I took some DayQuil before I came. I lost it here. The Carson River Advisory Committee, years ago, that was formed to decide the master plan of the river. When we started laying out some plans, we did not put the trailhead where they did at Silver Saddle. We put it up above on the power line road and tried to restrict all traffic from Silver Saddle Road all the way up to the power line road, and then to keep them out of those direct watersheds. So what they've done is they've gone up every watershed, and they've made 100 different roads up those hillsides now. And BLM built a site, and I'm bashing them a little bit, but I was upset with it because we made comments to that, and they didn't even pay attention to them. And it's for a more advanced rider because you don't even have a road out of there that a kid can ride, a beginner or somebody. And every one of those are braided now because of all the different floods, and it's a mess. So to fix all this, you need to develop a really nice OHV staging area. It's that simple. And they've restricted that now by making our boundary rural because they won't allow staging areas in a rural, only in a frontal zone, which is they're doing in Douglas County. And I really think Carson City, we need to, and this might be different for open space, but we need to be a champion for the OHVs and give them a site, a park, and bring a family and have a trail system put in for everybody to enjoy the Pine Nuts, but from an area away from the river, so they're not going up and down all the watersheds. And that's the only solution I can see that makes any sense. Rather than eliminating them, you put a nice space for them, maybe around Sedge, maybe over near Deer Run somewhere, or look at Silver Saddle again and develop a different system out of that area. So that needs to be a strong message to BLM, I think, before we eliminate that. They fought me in a public meeting. You have open, limited, and closed. Open means you can ride anywhere. Limited means they're limited to roads. But they have no road plans. They don't have system roads. So anything that's a two-track, a little old OHV track, a single track is a road. So they can ride on everything they've been riding on in a limited. So I think we need to tell them that they need to develop a road plan on the Carson City side, this on the Pine Nut IRMA, that shows what those roads are that they can use, and then open it like they have when they get back up and let them play. So I think that's really important in these terms that they put out and the way they kind of hide it in different areas. I think that's really important. So I hope that can happen and that we can champion for the OHV groups and look for staging and then talk to them about either they change in a rural area you can put an OHV staging area, or make a frontal zone along the boundaries of Carson City like they did over in Douglas County, so that allows that to take place. So that establishment of the road system, they have a road map, and there's only like a few roads that they're saying are roads. But the description of limited means they can ride on any of that stuff. So it really wouldn't solve it all. So it needs to be closed, and they have a difficult time closing land on BLM, as I think, because of the public pressure on them, on the OHV issue. So all we're asking, though, is the watershed in the river. And I think that's really a charge, since you guys are now Carson River Advisory Committee, that should be really paid attention to. I mean, there were thousands of yards of mud and muck put into the river from all those channels over this that 400-year event. And I live out there, so I know all those things. But that's just inexcusable to me. So if we can solve that and work with them and say that we'll partner with them and collaborate with them to resolve all these issues, work with the OHV communities and establish a site, I think that's really important. And the hard part is when you develop this plan as to where to plug that in this. So I have some recommendations, so I'll send this to Ann. And that's not to say she has to put it in there. But it takes more clout than as I'll send it in as myself, too. But it's a lot more clout when it comes from this board than from me by a long shot. So, and actually, there, anywhere along the river, we used the power line road before because that's kind of a really good road for the OHVers to use to get from Douglas County to Carson City. And I don't think you could ever close it unless you put the Air National Guard out there like the border between us and Mexico or a big wall or something. I mean, it's just a natural boundary. But if you leave the power line, if it leaves it, then possibly maybe a half a mile, three-quarter mile from the river. But the power line road pretty well delineates it because it goes all the way from Deer Run all the way to Douglas County. So, and it gives them a good marker for that. So I threw the IRMAs at you and the RMZs at you, but if you really, I actually was writing one for the Black Rock Desert, so I'd seen these terms before. But and they have a, they determine those by their recreation opportunity spectrum, the ROS, as they call it. So it's just to kind of fine-tune that so they'll allow us to help fix this OHV problem that I think is a really important part of this community is to enhance that for these folks because there's a lot of people that do that out there and they have a good time. So the clothes issue, the system road issue, and then another part that wasn't brought into is it's called recreational shooting. You can go through all 2,000 pages. It's on one line on one page under safety, recreational shooting, and it's not closed. I was out there the other day, and there was two nice families sitting right on my road out to my house in Sierra Vista shooting these bottles on the side of the road there. It's not. They weren't, I can't remember how many feet they are from the river, but I don't think it's illegal. I almost was going to stop and say hi and see, you know, just kind of explain to them that's a silly place because it's right on the public thoroughfare here. But I let it alone. I came back and they left all the bottles there and busted them all up right on the side of the road. So shooting to me is an important element too that I didn't see in there is to pursue these zones that might be in that closed area to be close to shooting too. And it might help that a little bit. And then the fire prevention is a thought that they have what's called a visual resource, with the BRMs, visual resource. I can't think of the last word is. So Carson City has that viewshed law. What's it? I can't remember the hillside ordinances. And you have certain requirements so that you don't destroy that. BLM has that, and I saw in your comments that they say they didn't do a good inventory, but the class changes from rural and frontal, so you can actually have a lower VRM for frontal. So what you do, if we make it frontal, then the VRM can drop, so I'm telling them don't drop it for this situation, leave it up higher because of Carson City's rules and laws to protect that viewshed from Carson City, anything that drops into Carson City that's visual from the roadways there. So it gets really difficult to look at all this thing, but the fire thing might be an issue for the VRM is what I'm alluding to. They really need to build fire zones, brush reduction, pinion PJ treatments, something to bring the fire dangers down on that zone so that fires may not move into the residential areas as such as Bruce and such as myself or anybody else that's in that frontal zone that might have a concern for fires. So that needed to be in there. And then I actually picked on them, too, because BIA owns a big chunk of that in there, and they haven't said anything about what BIA says is going to happen. So I don't know how that works and how that's part of the document when they get done. So that's all I wanted. When you build these motorized trails, I brought a good example to BLM. I actually worked to finish the project up. It's called a place, Chief Mountain, out of Battle Mountain. Like I think I've told this committee before. It's like 40 miles out of town, way out of Battle Mountain. The tourism folks there got together and said, let's build a really nice ATV area. And this is a really nice ATV area with a really nice staging area, restroom, parking, signage, and a really nice trail system all in the back country of up out about a mountain there. And BLM manages it and takes care of it. They have an example of how they can do it. So that, and it has blue, green, black status for designations for rideability. They have a kids area, a learning area. It's all designed really nice, and that would be, it fit in here really well to accommodate the OHVs so you don't fill up the room with the OHVs coming in here worried that things are being shut down. We're really trying to help them here to have access, but stay off of the river corridor is all we're saying. So enough said for me, and I appreciate your time again. And I'll send this in, but, I mean, I don't know how to ask this board because it's really hard for a board to answer one of these things as a board, but I hope some of my comments can come to play. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Are there any other public comments at this point? Okay. I guess question of the committee. Mark made some suggestions regarding OHVs, regarding some visual resources. Are there any thoughts from the committee's perspective in terms of incorporating any of those or using those to amplify some of the comments we've already talked about? Do we want to ask staff to incorporate any of those elements in the consolidated comments that we coordinate on, if you will, and bring forward to the Board of Supervisors? What's the committee's thought or thoughts?
I thought Mr. Kimbrough made some very good points, especially about reclassifying the front of the pinion so that we can have an OHV staging area. I know that the Carson River Advisory Committee was very diligent in protecting the river, and I don't want us to be any less diligent in that. I also think that the issues with fire and fuels reduction should be, as Mr. Kimbrough brought up, should be included and brought into consideration. I am afraid that, personally, that this, I hope this letter has more kick to it. I am extremely concerned with my past as a weed coordinator for Carson City. As Ann said, the BLM treated twice. Neither time did they treat. They paid to have treatment done, but that was only twice. They have the current staff with BLM does not seem to have an interest in treating chemically the weeds. And I say current staff because when I first started with the Weed Coalition, there was a fellow that worked for the BLM who was out there on a regular basis with a chemical tank on his back and taking care of weed issues. But there are some serious chunks of property on BLM and right next to Carson City lands or what will be Carson City lands that have not been properly treated or follow-up treatment. If you treat 1 year and ignore it for two, you've bought yourself nothing.
Thank you, Margie. Any other comments from committee members regarding? Yes, Donna.
I'd just like to enforce what Margie said. I think that all of Mark's comments should really be included in our letter. I think that ignoring the fact that they have not identified the urban interface over there on that side is a serious problem. And that really needs, and I'm all in favor of making those changes so that we can have a nice staging area for the OHV people.
Thank you. Any other comments? I guess from my perspective, I thought Mark's comments were real helpful. I would certainly support the idea of incorporating those. And I think we need to be aware of the ramifications of some of these classifications and some of the subtleties. So if nothing else, we're on record as recommending something different or opposing what is recommended in at least some, if not all, of their alternatives in some of these areas. And it would also seem to me, in coordination with what Margie's saying, that fairly firm recommendations and position on what we think is best for open space in this interface area. I guess our experience has been that they're not in a position to very actively manage what we see as our direct interface. And I know they have a lot of land and a lot of area to take care of, but I think we need to really speak up and make sure that we have identified the critical areas from our perspective. And also, I think it's important with regard to the future of OHV in Carson City, in my mind, is to the east primarily. And we really need to do what we can to try to make sure that in a resource-responsible way, we are supporting that process and that planning, and at the same time protecting the river and some of the other areas that have had a lot of damage associated with usage that potentially could be better managed if we had a little bit different approach. So with all of that, any other final public comment before we go to the board for a committee for a motion? Okay, I think we need an action item here so the staff has direction to proceed in basically finalizing comments going forward, which will go to the Board of Supervisors and then hopefully on to BLM. So do we have a motion or further discussion from the board?
I'll attempt it.
It's going to need some changes.
I move to recommend that the staff continue developing the plan for the Board of Supervisors, the letter for the Board of Supervisors, to provide the comments that we have discussed, and for the draft resource management plan and the environmental impact statement. I believe staff will do a good job of combining it all, so I don't know that we need to be super detailed there, but that's my motion.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Yeah, I'll second it.
All right. Is there discussion?
I just want to make sure that motion includes and encompasses the comments that were made concerning Mark's suggestions, those would be incorporated too, because I think we were all in agreement with those.
Okay. The nodding is affirmative. Any other comments from the committee? Public comment? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Those comments will be finalized, transmitted to the board for hopefully their approval and transmittal to BLM. Okay, that's all for that item. Next item is item F, discussion only regarding a process to select a project or projects for submission to the Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act's Parks, Trails, and Natural Resource Areas Grant Program. Mr. Molendorf.
Okay, I'd like to, in addition to talking about what you just mentioned, I'd like to also kind of give you an update on the status of the Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act's Parks, Trails, and Nature Areas programs. And now that you said that and I've said it, I'm going to revert back to the acronyms SNPLMA and PTNA because it's just so much easier. SNPLMA's PTNA program has been a program that Carson City has utilized to obtain grant money for projects such as we didn't purchase the Bentley property through the PTNA, but we did purchase it through the SNPLMA program, and we have a current project, the Eagle Valley or Eagle Creek crossing project, which includes a bridge, at least one bridge. Is currently in the works, and design work is progressing on that one. But it's been an important project for us. It's a good money. It's a good source for funding. We didn't apply for a grant in this current round simply because we haven't completed the Eagle Valley Creek project yet at this point, and also a little bit with the individual workload within our department, as well as citywide, because as you know, we rely on Public Works to help manage a lot of our projects as well. But that was round 15, and what SNPLMA has decided to do is they're going to go every other year, or every 2 years with their program. So they're going to be gearing up for round 16. And round 16, they'll be accepting submittals for grant applications in the fall of 2016 with funding early 2017. So we've got a little bit of time. And so what I'm proposing to the Open Space Advisory Committee, and we made the same proposal to the Park and Recreation Commission, is that we take a look now in the next 18 months and probably starting this fall, start getting serious about talking about potential projects that we feel would have the best opportunity to receive funding through the SNPLMA's PTNA program. And give you a little snapshot, in this current round, there was about $30 million available. Now that's $30 million available in approximately, I think there's seven categories at SNPLMA. Funds. The PTNA is one. One of the categories was fill reductions and improvements to Lake Tahoe. My understanding is that that project is going to go away because they have received their full funding. I think it was $300 million, and they've received that funding. Because the land sales are now, because we're kind of coming out of this recession, at least maybe it doesn't feel like you're in Carson City, but down in Clark County in Southern Nevada, they are coming out of the recession, and there is more interest, and they're selling more public land now, more BLM land, which, as you know, the proceeds for those sales goes to fund the SNPLMA's grant projects. So they're expecting that instead of about $30 million, that maybe by the next round there may be as much as $50 million available, which sweetens the pot a little bit if Lake Tahoe is not eligible for additional funding. In the current round, that $30 million equated to about $4.5 million available in the PTNA program. That could go as high as maybe $6 or $7 million in the next round. So we're having more money available for these projects than we've had in quite some time. Back in the heyday, pre-recession, there was a lot of money available. When the recession hit, we were struggling for maybe not quite even $2 million that would be involved in the PTNA program. Another reason we didn't submit a grant this time is in the past, it was you didn't have much of an opportunity to receive a grant if you didn't have some type of a cash match. And we haven't had a cash match in the last couple of years. That cash match is not a hard requirement. It seems like they have relaxed that requirement to have a cash match. I sit on the PTNA board, which means I'm one of the judges for the projects that come forward for funding. And so now I think that with a relaxation of the cash match, more money into the program, I think it really behooves us to get serious about trying to find, you know, the best project or projects, because we can submit more than one project, to try to find funding. So how do we do that? Well, I'm proposing that what we do is we actually form a little bit of a PTNA program of our own. And with a combination of staff, the public, and the Open Space Advisory Committee, including and also the Park and Recreation Committee, that we start bringing projects forward, ideas for projects, and we kind of filter those out as a group. Maybe we'll even have a joint meeting with the Park and Recreation Commission and Open Space Advisory Committee, and then use the criteria, the judging criteria that we use in the PTNA program, and run our own little mini PTNA program, actually to the point where we even provide presentations on the projects and see which projects filter out and become the highest rated and highest ranked project. Then I think we have some assurance that we have a really good project to take to SNPLMA and the PTNA, and I think it will increase our chances of funding. It's not inconceivable that we might not be able to apply for a project that, may be close to $1 million in funding. So we can think big picture on this. I do want to kind of cover some of the priorities. It's in the staff report, but I'm going to go ahead and cover it verbally too. The park, trails, and natural areas' highest priorities are projects that meet the following criteria. One, they serve communities or identify populations within communities that have been traditionally underserved. Two, they promote connectivity that links people to nature and to recreational opportunities and unites places across the landscape. Three, projects that protect the integrity of the community resources, including natural, cultural, historical, educational, environmental, and open spaces. And four, minimizes future maintenance and replacement costs and shows a high degree of sustainability. SNPLMA is very concerned about communities applying for projects, getting grants for the projects, and then not be able to sustain the maintenance and the management of those projects. So that's why that's in there. So typically, projects that are most successful in obtaining funding are projects that include physical, cultural, and educational connectivity from an urban area to natural landscapes. So everything we've been talking about today, trails, is a natural. And I've been on the PTNA board now, I don't know, for 3 or 4 years. And trails always float to the top. If you can find trails that provide the connectivity that Mark and Jeff talked about in terms of having trail systems that take you from one location to another and provides, you know, that type of connectivity that particularly takes visitors, recreationists, users of those trails from the urban area out into the public lands, out into the wild country. Those are the kind of projects they like. I'll give you an example. One of the goals of the Las Vegas area is to build a trail that completely circumnavigates the Las Vegas Valley. And as you know, there's quite a few communities in that area. They're all combining together and working collaboratively to make this happen. And so every year, one or two communities will put in a grant application that furthers that goal and that project. So, you know, I think we have the same kind of opportunity here, you know, with our trail systems on the west side and on the east side. They like projects that will combine parks with trails. In other words, you could have a park that would also serve as a trailhead. But what they won't, well, I guess won't, that's probably not the right word, but typically what their lowest priority are what you would call traditional park and recreation type projects. Ball fields, athletic fields, sports fields, neighborhood parks, those type of projects now have a lower priority according to the criteria than connectivity projects that provide interpretation, cultural advantages, and connectivity to the outdoors. So I guess kind of with that, you know, I think what I'd like to do is kind of planting the seed, you know, with the Open Space Advisory Committee to start thinking about these type of projects over the next few months. And again, probably in the summer, we'll start getting more serious about this, bringing examples of projects that have been funded by SNPLMA and the PTNA program and other communities so you get a sense and an idea of the feel for what those type of projects are. And then, you know, at one of the meetings, we'll conduct sort of a little workshop within the meeting to get input from the public, from this board, and from the Open Space or from the Park and Recreation Commission to try to bring projects forward, as I mentioned before, so that we can actually run them through a PTNA criteria and see what floats to the top. So, kind of a audience participation program is what I'm looking for here in the future.
Thanks, Roger. One question. Would a major project that breaks into phases be an approach that we might consider? Thinking about trails, you know, segments lend themselves to that kind of an approach.
You know, that's a really good point, Bruce. Those projects that have phasing opportunities that you know, sort of a larger scale project that they're just kind of chunked in phases and received very high priority.
Sounds interesting, and it sounds like it could really fit with some of the things that we've been working on. Members of the committee, any questions, comments? Howard?
Yes, I have a comment. I really support that idea of gathering, going out to the community and getting ideas from the various, both internally city departments, but also the public. And I'm really encouraged to see some of the criteria for the PTNAs, because, you know, I love these trails that we're building, but at the same time, I see, I'm already seeing some difficulties on the horizon at the trailheads. You just go up to Kings Canyon, and, you know, it's a beautiful place to take your OHV, as well as there's access to the Ash Kings and waterfall. And so I really want to, I hope we can concentrate on those type of facilities that connect, as I said, connect our community with those trails that we have. Because I see a lot of cars that are going to be parking on places where they shouldn't be parking pretty soon, because we're running out of room already. And the Ash Kings Canyon Trail has only been open 1 year, so... you know, I think we need to have a vision to the future of what we're looking at now and perhaps 2 years from now.
Thank you. Shades of Hidden Beach, huh?
Donna. One thing I'd just like to say, the Ash to Kings Canyon Trail hasn't even officially been opened yet. And we need a porta potty there pretty bad.
I'm intrigued also by the idea of maybe a closer liaison with Parks and Rec. And I think, you know, maybe an informal working group, or maybe a couple members of each committee, or there may be a way we can start some dialogue, Roger, in that regard. I would think we would be very, very interested in looking at this from the standpoint of open space and the potential for doing some of these things that are trails and connectivity, but a lot of that is going to get us over into more of the park side than open space. So I think a complementary approach to me makes a lot of sense. Plus, we certainly don't want to be competing within Carson City for projects in a program like this, where there are significant resources available if we put together a good grant application.
Just kind of a follow-up comment to that. The last time we submitted a grant for the PTNA, it was to refurbish athletic fields up at John D. Winter Centennial Park and to convert a baseball field into a soccer field. The idea being that we have a lot of soccer fields for the youth in our community, but we really don't have really good soccer fields for the adult program. That program, or that project, was rated high. We didn't receive funding at the time, number one, because it was, at that time, the most expensive, the most costly project that was brought forward to the PTNA that year, which wouldn't have been the case this year. There were projects that were twice as expensive this year that, you know, that were approved. And B, we didn't have a cash match. But what they liked about that project was it provided service for an underserved community. And so really, if you could have that type of project that would have a trail connectivity and trailhead to it, you would have really a dynamite project, you know, project that would really go well.
Thanks, Roger. I think it's really helpful that you've sat on the board that reviews these and have a pretty good feel for what the thinking is, because obviously when you're making a grant application, you want to fit in with the criteria they're looking at. Any public comment? Thoughts, suggestions?
I want to ask a question.
Okay, Mark?
I should know the answer, but I don't.
Does it pay for planning like the EAs?
No, unfortunately it doesn't. It doesn't pay for planning, and that's a difficult part of it. You know, a lot of the planning has to be done prior to the submission of the grant.
And some of that you know, maybe there may be some staff capability. Some of that may be outside help. Some of that conceivably could be interesting an entity who's looking at economic development or tourism to some seed money for planning to help put together elements. But things we can work on, I think. Okay, any other members of the committee have anything to add? Any questions? Any thoughts? You're allowed to say things, Alan, if you choose. I realize you're taking it all in, and that's fine, but don't feel shy. Okay, moving on to the next item. Recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of the fiscal year 2015-2016 budget for the Open Space Program. By way of introduction, I briefly mentioned to the board that we would be coming forward with the open space budget here when I presented the annual report to them in February. So they know we're there, and they know that our hope is to consider some additional staff help as we get into the management aspects of things. So with that, I would turn this back over to Roger or Ann, whoever's going to take the lead.
I will start the item, and Roger can jump in anytime he feels the need. So looking ahead to the next fiscal year, which starts July 1st, there's an estimated revenue of approximately $870,000 for the year. And so similar to when I brought the budget to the committee for the budget augmentations, the mid-year augmentations, just the items that the committee has discretion to review, because there's some items, you know, retirement, sick leave, not so much. But these are the items where you have the flexibility to adjust those numbers. And so you will see a few new items on our budget for the fiscal year, and I suppose this is being hopeful. But we have Silver Saddle Ranch on here. So we need to estimate the cost for the phone, power, and heating. And the items on here, I received just the last few months of bills from the BLM, so that's the starting point until we really have the land and know what it will cost us. In addition to that, the contractual service, I would like the committee to recognize we will need to increase that maybe up to $5,000. That, and the contractual service at the last meeting, I recommended that we don't necessarily need that account line item, but where that might be helpful to us is after the acquisition of Silver Saddle Ranch and hiring a service to clean the toilets, because we don't have seasonal staff like the parks does. And so this estimate initially was based on the services of our porta potty rentals, which we were estimating at $100 a month, so times 12, but I think this is low. So if the committee can just recognize, I might need to bump that up after I receive better quotes. Let's see, the other items on here. Land acquisition was a significant change in the budget augmentation. We increased that amount, but we did close on the Araith acquisition. That was for the freeway multi-use path at the end of January. So Public Works is in the design process. And we are still in talks with Michael Fagan about a property exchange. So I did leave a balance in there that could help us at this point with a couple appraisals if we need it. If we actually need a little bit more money to complete the transaction, depending on the properties that are identified, that's where the undesignated account can be helpful to us. And at the moment, it is staff's recommendation to leave money in the undesignated account because it's easier for us to move that money where the need arises. And so that need can arise if in a future meeting, probably near future, if the staff wishes to recommend the addition of a park ranger to the open space program, then we can move money from the undesignated account. We can also have that money available if we find a project that pertains to open space lands for the Sniplema project. We can have money for planning. and the land acquisition with Michael Fagan, as I mentioned. The last couple items are just the grants on that table. That just gives you an idea of the balance where we are. The SNPLMA fuels reduction shows a zero balance in the next fiscal year. We've had that grant for 5 years, and it expires at the end of this month. So we're at the end. Are there any questions?
Does that mean no sheep this year?
The sheep actually cost us very little, anyhow.
Yes, Howard.
Ann, what's the revenue increase over last year projected to be at?
I think the revenue over last year was about $50,000 to open space.
Increase? I mean, percent increase in sales tax that projected?
$50,000 increase from last year.
You don't have a percentage? Percentage-wise?
You know, I don't know what the percentage of that is. It's less than a 10% increase,
okay.
Obviously.
Okay. And then, so the professional services I'm interested in, I was wondering how we did last year on professional services.
We are...
compared to what we're proposing this year.
Kind of estimating that we have a few months left in this fiscal year, we might be close to this amount.
Okay.
$75,000.
Okay. All right. So we're using that.
Yes, we are.
With the previous agenda item we had regarding the PTNA, it was mentioned that it's important to position ourselves to do some planning for those types of projects, and so my personal opinion is I'd rather put money out in the private sector to develop those preliminary designs or environmental clearances that need to be done, as opposed to burden staff with additional duties, and so I'm just hoping that that's enough to get some of these potential projects in the pipeline, so we can get those grants. That would be my only comment.
You know, that's a good point. At this point, the level of planning you need for a submission of grant, of course, doesn't require 30%, 50%, or more. You know, design type drawings. You know, it's basically still a little bit conceptual, unit prices and that type of thing. But your point is good because. You know, we have the 1-8 cent sales projects going on, and that's taken a lot of staff time. It's taken some park and recreation staff time, but it's taken a lot of public works staff time to work on those projects as well. You mentioned the professional services. If you look at that first column, the fiscal year 2014-2015, it's important to understand that is the mid-year adjustments to the budget. It's not what the original budget was. Yeah, it has been provided. And so you can see that actually the professional services was increased at mid-year to that 75,000 point. And so we're recommending that we're going to need the same amount for next year. There is one other increase I want to point out to you, because I know this is sometimes a sensitive one with not only with the Open Space Advisory Committee, but also with the Park and Recreation Commission. And that is the bottom one on page one. The ISC general fund, that's internal services charges. Those are the charges that the general fund charges non-general fund programs such as open space and quality of life programs for the services for having a clerk recorder here and, you know, having our deputy DA, which is not the right title.
No, it is.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah. Very good. You know, and other kind of ancillary services that the city provides, anything from human resources services to the room and all that, you know, so it's a way that the general fund can recoup some of the expenses that they put in to help fund the non-general fund programs. And you'll see that we're looking at an $8,802 increase. This one kind of caught us a little bit by surprise. We We had some discussions with our finance director today and our public works director. But the increase on that reflects a new position in the city that's being created called a property manager's position. And I want to bring this forward just so hopefully that, you know, we can make that clear to you folks and you don't have a question about it later on. But this is a position that will be basically out of the public works department. It'll be a general fund position that will be providing services not only to the general fund but primarily to non-general fund entities such as utilities, engineering, streets, open space, although I'm not sure, to be quite honest with you, that it's a position that we necessarily need or will take advantage of. But it's a first-year position, and they being the city finance director and the city manager, feel strongly that at least in the initial stages position, quality of life should participate. What this position will actually be doing will be in charge of, the city owns a lot of property throughout town, not only open space property, but property such as the North Ridge facility. I think you're all familiar with that. We have empty lots. We have property all over town that we own. We really don't have a centralized manner in maintaining and managing those properties, everything from leases to updating appraisals to doing survey work, to managing us easements and right-of-ways that may be contained on those properties. And so their proposal is to create a property manager position that will basically take the lead on all that, doing an inventory. We really don't even have an inventory, believe it or not, on all this property. So that would be one of the first tasks this individual does. Now, how is that going to help our program? There are properties that we're going to be receiving through the lands transfer with the BLM that's going to contain some right-of-ways and easements. That'll be a function that they can perform, you know, for us. They may be able to even help out with appraisals or setting up appraisals when we're looking at, if we're looking at the eventuality of purchasing property in the future. They may be able to help us with some surveying work. But what we hope that after the first year is we'll have an opportunity to look at that amount, that $8,800 and some dollars that is being earmarked to be funded through this project, and find out if that number is accurate. If it's not, the way we handle this is that every year all the departments that provide those kinds of services provide their expenses, and we have a consultant that comes through and puts together all that and does a cost allocation study. And so the first year is basically a benchmark as far as budgeting. Hopefully, as years go along, that becomes more refined, and we find out really what the percentages of allocation should be for each one of these funds. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer.
Roger, just an observation. I would hope that staff would have a list of things that we could benefit from as open space from that position, so that at the very least we are able to take advantage of those services for which we're about to be charged.
That's a really good point. You know, we're sort of in this position that we have two choices. One is that we don't use the services and hopefully that then we're not allocated any of the cost towards it. But that's probably not very realistic. The second one is that we're going to try to use as much of that $8,800 as we can. And one way that I look at it is that theoretically this could provide some relief on Ann's position and maybe Rich's position and allow them to focus more on the management of the property rather than, you know, trying to track down easements and all that kind of, you know, that kind of work instead. So my inclination is to try to do exactly what you just mentioned, try to come up with projects and ideas that we can fully utilize that position as much as possible.
Thanks, Roger. Any other? Yes, Donna.
Yeah, regarding the Silver Saddle Ranch, the phone, heating, and power, and power. Now, that's for the Red House?
Primarily, yes, but there is power over at the White House complex and the shed over there as well.
Okay.
And the garage.
So there's not going to be anyone residing there?
Correct.
Okay. I really question $1,200 for the phone.
And we've debated that if we want internet capability out there.
Oh, okay. That would definitely increase the cost because, you know, I mean, you can get a line with no long distance on it, which they wouldn't need long distance for $20 a month. But if you want internet, then, yeah, it's going to raise the price. Okay.
Okay. Any other comments from the committee? Any public comment? Okay. Do we have a motion?
I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of the fiscal year 2015-2016 budget for open space program.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further comment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, non-action items. Are there any staff reports at this point?
Yes, one verbal update. We did take your recommendation to the Board of Supervisors regarding a property exchange with Michael Fagan. They have approved that. We're continuing that process, and currently we're looking at a property that is owned by the Parks Division as a possible exchange. So we are tentatively scheduled for the next Parks Commission to see if that is an option for a trade. Only one property right now is under consideration. Yeah, second update, this Saturday, you're all invited to come out to Ambrose. We will be working with more than 100 high school students to wrap chicken wire around the cottonwood trees. What time does that start?
8:30.
8:30 at Ambrose, just a half day.
Great. Thanks, Ann. Committee comments. Margie.
What high school students?
Carson High School, ROTC.
Go all, River Wranglers.
All years, freshman through senior.
Very good.
Okay, any other staff reports? Committee. Donna.
Where are we on the management plan and the application for an ordinance?
The management has not been worked on because of workload and grants that have deadlines and timelines and deadlines, so those have taken priority. Now with Rich on staff, maybe in another month I'll have a little bit more time, but Lynn Zong, who was the most recent consultant working on that, she has contacted me. She's ready to keep me on track, so we'll work on that. As for the ordinances, what we have talked about is having a workshop. So there's more dialogue, more interaction, understanding where all the properties are. And so in preparation of that, if we work with Mark Kimbrough, we'll send an email identifying all the properties, because I don't know if all of you have been to all of the properties, just so you have an understanding of all of our different resources out there.
One of the reasons I'm bringing this up is I took my walking group along the Morgan Mill Trail. And there's dirt bikers that are down there daily. And one of the concerns is that the one sign at the gate from the parking area off of Deer Run Road, the way it's written, it doesn't say that it's excluded in that area. It says motorized vehicles are only allowed on designated or I forget how it says it, but it could be read that it should be okay there. The other issue is they're actually coming off of the other side and going underneath the bridge, and there's no sign underneath that bridge excluding them, so they can say, well, I didn't know we couldn't do this, even though we know that they know. But, yeah, we really need the management plan ordinances and a ranger.
You know, I could pipe in there until about 2 weeks ago. Ann's been really performing two jobs, so. You know, something had to give, and so we put the management plan on back burner because she did have some grant work that she had to, had hard timelines that she had to get completed.
And then there's that 2,000 page, you know, there's a huge amount of work. I just want to make sure I understand when you're talking about the ordinances. I understand the management plan, but are we going to have another conversation about the thing that Juan kept bringing back about all that? Or is
that is correct. That we'll start there.
But isn't our direction on that pretty much clear? You know, the whole thing, we went back and forth, and Juan kept, I mean, you got to give
I
that guy.
I think in the last meeting there were some unresolved issues. And
what was unresolved?
Well, and we just need to take a look at all the properties.
I understand the properties. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking, when you mentioned ordinance, that's when I perked up. When we're talking about permissible activity and not permissible activity, and we went round and round on that. That's done, right?
No, there was not an action on that.
Ever any official action. We can certainly go back and research that, find out.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to look at the minutes. I thought there was action on that we, the committee agreed on the language. And then Juan brought it back and we agreed again on the language. So I just want to make sure that, you know, we don't just keep revisiting things that, you know, we've got so much to move forward. It seems like when we get something resolved, it ought to stay resolved. So, you know, if you're going to do, I'd ask you to let me know if you believe, you know, after you look at it, that because it's my clear recollection it was resolved, it's not resolved, and let us know ahead of time about workshops.
Yeah, if it's not resolved, we probably need it as an agenda item in our April meeting, just to clarify it if that's still a question. And if nothing else, if it is clear, we probably need to talk about where we go from there. So, okay, any other committee comments? Margie?
I would like to say that I don't know who all the candidates were, but I personally believe that you could not have found a better person for the natural resource specialist than Rich Wilkinson. I've worked with him for the past 7 years and been amazed at what he can do. And I'm so grateful that he's got 160 hours a week to spend on it for us.
Thank you, Margie. Rich and Alan are competing for the over-vocalization award tonight, but it's nice to have you both with us. Any other comments from the committee? Final public comments. All right. We have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. All right. The meeting is adjourned.